This podcast of Seattle Unity Sunday Service is free to you, but it's not free to make. Please remember to hit the donate button so we can continue to bring you great podcasts like this one.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. Try that. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes.
If you like harmony, sing them.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest.
No, no.
We who believe in freedom cannot rest.
Presence, the power, the activity of God that moves in and through us now and always. So let us affirm together our opening statement. There is but one presence and one power in my life and in the universe, God the good, omnipotence.
Some of you recognize this song if you're old enough to recognize Sweet Honey in the Rock. So this is written by Bernice Johnson Regan, and it comes with a lot of really great verses that are unfortunately still very applicable, but I want to hear some of those. So Stephanie Ann Johnson, would you please sing me a couple of those, please?
I'd love to, yes. The secret of mine going on is when the rain.
As our first step into this more contemplative part of the service, I want to invite forward Mike Brennan for our reading.
Accomplishment from the Daily Word, dated September 1950. Through the Spirit of God within me, I successfully face and cope with my responsibilities this day. I confidently accept my responsibilities this day, knowing that they are met through the power of the Christ within me. I make no attempt to shift the problems or duties that confront me to others, for in meeting them, I prove my divine abilities and grow in understanding. Every time I fearlessly face a responsibility, I grow in spiritual stature. I have no fear of failure because I perform my designated task with God's help. This power is mighty within me and responds instantly as I call upon it. Within me are the knowledge and strength to accomplish all things. No responsibility is too heavy for me when I realize that I do not carry it alone. The responsibilities that are mine have come to me because it is I who can best discharge them. Instead of shifting them to those around me, I avail myself of spiritual help and am led to successful accomplishment. Through Christ in me, all things are done.
I want to love you more. just like this. One love, one light. Come home. It's all right. I'll cover you. Yeah? And if you're going to sing it, it sounds like this. Let's practice.
So this year, our theme is sowing seeds of grace. And in order, I believe that we're living in times right now that call for us, if we want to move forward individually and collectively, then the time has come where we each need to accept responsibility and face reality while being open to grace. I think that's what's called for us in 2020. So I know that Michael Bogard just finished teaching Swamplands of the Soul. Who took the class? Who in here took the class? And I had asked for some feedback, and Faitha G sent me an email this week, and I just want to read to you. Faith, raise your hand so we know where you are, what she had to say. What got me to attend the class was Michael saying that we had to go through the swamp to get to our destiny. We learned from James Hollis, the author, that you have many different egos, heroic, anger, jealousy, and if you don't accept all of your egos, then you are living unconsciously and ignoring who you truly are. In accepting these traits, you can work with them and start becoming conscious of your true self. So all of you who took Swamplands of the Soul have taken a step forward in this process of facing reality, right, and accepting responsibility. So thank you for doing that. Because the truth is, we all have to face the good, the bad, and the ugly that's within ourselves and really look at it so that things can be healed and changed and transformed. Because if we never look at anything, then how can we change anything, right? How can we see it? So Unity's number one teaching is, I know you all know it, there's one presence and one power in the universe, God, the good, omnipotence, omnipresence, and omniscient. So the way we differ with traditional Christianity is we don't believe in a separate entity called the devil that's running around creating havoc in the world, because guess what? We can do that on our own, right? We are co-creators of God. We have free will, so we can do all these things. But the principle of God being good is not a Pollyannish teaching. It is, to me, it's a very deep teaching, and it calls for us to really go within and call forth the good, even in situations where we may not, where they may not appear to be good in the outer appearance. In the book of Genesis, when Joseph is sold into slavery by his brothers, and then later is reunited with them, he says to them, "You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good." So when we teach that there is one presence and one power in the universe, God the good, again, it's not a Pollyannish teaching. It's actually quite profound that we are called to step into that. Our other teachings, of course, is that the Spirit of God indwells all beings, which we call the Christ. And we believe that Jesus fully awakened to his Christ nature and was a way shower for us in a way, that he demonstrated how to live. And he isn't the only one who fully awakened, but so in our teachings, we don't accept Jesus as a savior to get somewhere, but rather we can follow in his footsteps, in the Buddha's footsteps, in many other spiritual teachers' footsteps to awaken to that presence of God that dwells within each one of us. And then, of course, our teachings of the law of mind action, denial and affirmation, which is releasing and then calling in the good, and, of course, doing good works in the world. So I think that one of the reasons that Unity and other New Thought organizations aren't wildly popular is because of the implied teaching of self-responsibility, right? Since we don't have a devil that we can blame for things, we need to accept responsibility for ourselves, for our own actions, for the things that happen to us in life. We need to look at these things. And it's so much easier to say, the devil made me do it, right? For those of us who are old in the 70s, remember, the devil made me do it was a saying from Flip Wilson, who played the character of, was it Gertrude, I think?
Geraldine,
I had the G right. You're all showing your age. So Jean Houston said this, defined the devil in this way. She said, "The devil is the thought within us that we're not good enough to fulfill our dreams. The devil can be any thought, circumstance, message, or experience that robs us of our destiny and diminishes our will to participate with power, vision, and purpose." Right? It makes so much sense. She says it's an energy that overrides our best intentions and leaves fear, self-doubt, uncertainty, or resignation in its wake. The devil may want you to go to sleep, avoid the important decisions, let someone else solve the problems. But the stakes are too high now to let this rascal lead the dance now. So again, we're being called to awaken, right? We're being called to face reality, to look at those things that we may not want to look at in our life. And the truth is, another way of saying that blaming others is passing the buck, right? And we know that passing the buck is as old as Adam and Eve, because that's where it first started, right? So they're in the Garden of Eden, and God says to them, "You can have anything you want, anything, but that tree. Don't touch that tree. Don't eat the apples from that tree." So what, of course, what do they do? I mean, how many of us have been around kids and you say, "Don't touch that. You can have anything, but you can't have that." And what's the first thing they do is they go for that. So Eve, of course, is in the garden, and she runs into the serpent, and he says, "Here, you know you should eat this." And she's like, "No, I'm not supposed to." And he's like, "Well, God just doesn't want you to be like him, because once you eat this apple, you're going to wake up," which she did. And one story, too, about the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden is I've also heard that it's an analogy for us as spirits that have sort of stepped into the body, right? We stepped in the body, and then we kind of got trapped here or whatever. And so as she ate this fruit, she saw good and evil. She woke up, in a sense. And now that she was in this place, she didn't want to be there by herself. So she brought an apple to Adam, and he ate it. And then God shows up. And God notices that there's something different about Adam. And he said, "Did you eat the fruit of that? Did you do that?" "Well, yeah, but she made me do it." So then he goes to Eve, "Did you do it?" "Yes, but the serpent made me do it." And so we have the passing of the buck. at, you know, at the very beginning of time. How many of you have ever passed the buck? How many of you have just sort of moved it on? And sometimes I think it's just kind of ingrained in us from, I don't know, from Adam and Eve time, I guess. So I'm going to tell a story on myself that's not the most, whatever. It's a family story that my father loved to tell, and I do remember it from my own perspective. But I think I'm about 2 years old because I'm in diapers. I remember this. And, you know, I was in potty training, but I had an accident. And my father was standing in front of me, and he goes, and the family dog, and he said, "What did you do?" And in my little mind, I saw the dog, and I thought, I could literally see the dog in my mind doing something on the rug, then picking it up and sticking it in the back of my pants. I saw that in my head. And it was perfectly logical to me in my little two-year-old mind. And I just looked at my dad and I pointed to the dog and I said, "Pally did it." And my father roared with laughter, of course, and he told that story over and over and over again. And no one's told that story since he died 10 years ago, except till now. But so, but it's interesting how those of us, especially when you have kids, it's like one, even our animals can do it sometimes where they try to like avoid responsibility. And in the book of Leviticus, one of the ways they solve the problem of blaming others is by having a scapegoat. So they would... the scapegoat was a goat let loose in the wilderness on Yom Kippur after the high priest symbolically laid the sins of the people on its head. So here's the reading from Leviticus. Aaron shall lay both his hands upon the head of the live goat and confess over it all the iniquities and transgressions of the Israelites, whatever their sins, putting them on the head of the goat, and then it shall be sent off into the wilderness through a designated man. Thus the goat shall carry on it all their iniquities to an inaccessible region, and the goat shall be set free in the wilderness. So maybe what we need is a scapegoat now, huh? Like a real goat come in. But so we see that there's even systems in place to like, okay, so what do we do with this responsibility? Or what do we do with this that we don't want to look at? I know, let's put it on a goat and send it out. And we kind of do that too with families and with certain people kind of end up sometimes being a scapegoat and carrying that energy for a group. But again, it gets back to facing reality. And sometimes we don't want to face reality. And one of the things that I appreciated when I was in Germany a couple of years ago, and I know I've shared this before, but I went to Berlin with my son, is that they don't hide from the Holocaust. They face it full on, and they accept responsibility for what they did. And to me, what that says is it opens them to grace. It opens them to the ability to begin to move forward as a nation, as a country. And because they could get rid of the concentration camps, you know, they could just bulldoze them over and act like it never happened, you know, and they don't. They still have them. And they have a memorial that's right in the center of Berlin. It's not hidden off somewhere. It's you just literally run into it when you're walking around. So the fact that as a nation they have taken that on is very powerful. And I think that our country is now just starting, like just taking baby steps toward looking at our past and owning our past. Because for some reason, we have a tendency to kind of brush over things. So as we celebrate Black History Month this month in February, we see that there's more acknowledgement that our country was built on the backs of the slaves for the last 300 or 400 years, right? That our country, that we destroyed the native peoples who lived here. And it's only, it feels to me like it's only now just starting to be acknowledged. We're starting now to become part of conventional wisdom. Because the truth is, if we don't own our past, if we don't look at who we've been and who we are, both as individual people and as a nation, then how can we be open to grace and how can we move forward? And it's unpleasant. It's unpleasant. uncomfortable. It's not an easy thing to do to face reality, is it? And yet it's something that we have to do in order to move forward. So I have another example of this, and for some reason my dad is up for me today. And I've shared with you in the past that I had a pretty violent childhood, and you know, my dad was an alcoholic and a rageaholic, whatever. And as he was at the end of his life, he was at the VA hospital, and I used to take care of the house and the finances, and so I'd go visit him. And one day we were just sitting in his room, and we were just watching Judge Judy, you know, afternoon TV. And he just looked over at me and he said, "Do you know that your brother tried to kill me on Father's Day one year?" And I did know. It happened like 10 or 15 years ago because my mom had told me about it. My brother had just snapped and, you know, nothing happened. So I said, "Yeah, I do know about that." And he said, "Why would anybody do that? What is wrong with your brother? Why would anybody want to do that to their dad on Father's Day?" And it was one of those moments, like I had imagined this conversation like my entire life. Like, I mean, I would sit and fantasize about finally having this conversation, and he apologizes, and we kiss and hug, and everything's fine. And I'm at this crossroad, and I'm like, well, I can either walk through this door that he just opened, or I can say, "I don't know," and then just kind of go on with Judge Judy. So instead, I said, "Well, I don't know, Dad. It could be because you beat Mom and Keith and myself pretty often, like a lot." And he looked at me and he said, "What are you talking about? I never laid a hand on any of you." And I was like, I thought he was joking. I said, "Surely you're kidding, right?" I said, what do you, and we started to get into it in this screaming match a little bit. And the nurses came in to see if everything was okay. And it's like, "We're fine." And it was, and one of the ways that I survived my childhood was by being invisible. I was really good at being invisible. So it was interesting because what he said to me was, he goes, "What do you even know about it? You weren't even there." And I thought, wow, I did a really good job of being invisible. He doesn't even remember that I was there. So I said, "Dad, I lived at home till I was 20. I was there." But anyway, he wouldn't acknowledge and or accept, and so any of the reality. And so it was interesting for me because in my mind, this isn't how this played out at all. You know, the way this was going to play out in my mind had a totally different a conclusion and a totally different scenario. And life is like that, isn't it? Things don't get tied up in a nice little bow and a nice little package where we go and we look for retribution or we look for an apology. It's not always there. So for me in that moment, I realized that my dad and I weren't ever going to go any further in our relationship, that we had gone as far as we could go in this life, that that's all there was. And it doesn't mean that I didn't love him, doesn't mean that I didn't see him or talk to him anymore, but I learned in that moment not to expect something that he couldn't provide, something that he couldn't give. And yet I wonder too, because I'm sure I'm not the only one that has been in this situation, that we've been in this, that what would have happened had it been different? And what would have been the grace? What would have been the miracle that could maybe have come out of that situation? How could things have changed? So again, the focus this morning is about looking at those things. So those of you who took swamp lands of the soul, again, I think I honor you for that willingness to be able to look at the things that are uncomfortable. Because the truth is, right now in our world, we have a lot of uncomfortable things that we have to look at, that we have to transform, and that we have to heal. And I do believe that each one of us is up for the task. So we're not just looking at it from a big perspective, but we're looking at it from a personal. So my question to you is, what are some of those ways that you may have passed the buck? What are some of those ways that you may have, you know, said, "The devil made me do it. I didn't do it"? What are some of those experiences in your own life where perhaps there's something that you need to confront or something that you need to discuss or something that you need to look at? Because what I know is that the presence of God is with us and that divine order manifests. So for me, I love my dad, and he has given me as many gifts from both the positive and negative side of him, and I appreciate all the things that he brought in my life. I don't appreciate the other things, but hey, you know, I think it's taught me to be able to survive in ways that I never would have survived if I hadn't had that kind of crash course when I was a child. So let's take a moment to bring this into prayer and bring this into spirit. So I invite you just to get comfortable. So in order for us to move forward individually and collectively, the time has come to accept responsibility, to face reality, while being open to grace. So what is it in your life that needs to be looked at, that needs to have the light shone upon it? Because know that that's where the power is. That's where the strength is. That's where the transformation lies. And is there someone that you need to approach, knowing that you may not get the resolution that you are expecting? And it doesn't matter, really. What matters is that willingness to look. Remember, the devil is the thought within us that we're not good enough to fulfill our dreams. It's an energy that can override our best intentions. But the stakes are too high now to let this rascal lead the dance. And every single one of us is up to the task, as we are the voices, the hearts, and the instruments of spirit. And it is for this awareness that we are truly grateful. Amen.
This land is your land. This land is my land. Was made for you and me. is your land. Come on, join us. You can sing. This land is my land.
We're going to sing this land again. This land is your land.
This land is your land.
And it's my land. We're going to share it together.
This land is your land.
That's right. Share it with your neighbor now. Come on.
This land is your land.
That's right. And now it's my land. That's right.
If you enjoyed this Seattle Unity Sunday service, please hit the donate button so we can bring you even more uplifting music and messages. Or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. You can find directions and information about all our programs, classes, services, and events at www.seattleunity.org. Or find us on Facebook, where we post all our readings, links to more podcasts, and sermon videos. Seattle Unity. Celebrating, inspiring, and deepening our individual and collective spiritual journeys.